What is the single most important driver of loyalty for your customers and for your employees? Is it price? Is it brand? Or is it something more fundamental? What if the secret wasn't a mystery at all, but something you could actually measure and manage? What if you could know with absolute clarity what your people and your customers truly expect from you, and then see in a simple score exactly how you are performing against those expectations? And once you have that intelligence, how do you stack up against your competitors? Where are you falling behind? Most importantly, how do you turn that insight into a transformative action plan that drives real growth and loyalty? Well, in this episode of Are You Being Served, we're talking to someone who may well have the answers. His name is Rowan Jackson. He's the chairman and founder of Promising Outcomes.
Right. Sit down, let's not make this a long one. Our market share graph for the last quarter looks like a ski jump, and we're not the ones on the fun ride down. We're hemorrhaging. I need answers now, Kerry.
Look, CJ, the guys are making the calls. The dials are moving. We're hitting our KPIs. The pipeline is... it's there.
And from our end, the data is green. We're averaging threes and fours across the board. Our campaign engagement, no complaints. The product is fine. Well, it's more than fine.
Marketing is great. We are hitting all the key demographics we targeted. Bullseye. I think our messaging is hitting the market. CJ, honestly, it is. It's really doing well.
Then why are we losing customers? They aren't just numbers on a chart. They're revenue walking out the door. Just explain that to me. Explain that.
Our competition, Lutz Call, they don't have anything we don't have. Same features, same price point.
But their sales are going up. Their line isn't going down, Gary. It's going up. So what are they doing that we aren't? Anybody?
What about another customer survey? We can get one of those out by Simone. You've got one ready to go, right? You got one ready to go right
now. Absolutely. We're ready to go. We have the Q4 sentiment survey prepped and loaded. We can push it live this very afternoon. It just gave me the word.
What is the point of another survey? We surveyed them the last quarter or the quarter before that. You just said they gave us threes and fours. No complaints. So we ask them again, and they'll tell us the same thing. I'm not asking if we are losing them. I'm asking why.
We are hitting our KPIs. I just don't know.
That is the first honest thing anyone has said in this room in the last 6 months. I don't know.
So we are calling this scenario the leaking bucket. And what we're going to do is we're going to put our company, which could be any industry, it could be any size company, we're going to put them on a webinar with our Rowan Jackson. And you get the chance to listen in.
Well, I suppose the historical context really begins by looking at what it is that Victorian shopkeepers used to do. They knew that in order for their business to survive, they needed to develop a relationship with their customers, which had three outcomes. And those three outcomes, firstly, were trust. In other words, the customer trusted the shopkeeper. Secondly, the customer stayed loyal to that shopkeeper. In other words, came back and repeated purchases and bought more things other than the first purchase. And then ultimately, over time, the customer became a fan of that particular shopkeeper and told other people. And we call that advocacy. So there's three things here, three things that really matter. And those three things haven't changed in organizations for well over 150 years, and they are trust, loyalty, and advocacy. TLA, trust, loyalty, and advocacy. So that's the first thing. What the shopkeepers also knew, that in many cases, the competing shop down the road would possibly be selling similar products to them. So they could differentiate themselves with the service that they provided. And very often the prices were the same as well. So you have three things in the value that the shopkeepers provided: a product, a service, for a price. And today we have an additional fourth characteristic of that value equation, which is called, how easy do you make it for me to be a customer of yours? How easy is it to work with you? Do you provide me with an enormous amount of hassle, or is it unbelievably simple to do what you want me to do? For example, renewing your car license every year through the DVLA is a very, very simple process because it's all online. And providing you don't have any unusual exceptions, then it's done in minutes. And that's an example of the organization taking hassle away from the customer to make things simple and easy. The foundations of the modern customer experience management were actually laid in the 1950s in the United States. And researchers began exploring this relationship between the customer experience and loyalty. The question was very simple. What is it that makes a customer loyal to an organization? These early studies established a critical insight which continues to underpin customer experience thinking today. And that is very, very basic. Customer loyalty is primarily determined by how well a supplier meets or exceeds the customer's expectations. Relatively infrequent basis with some sort of paper format customer satisfaction survey. I have to say that very few organizations actually did this. And even today, it's estimated that only 30% of organizations actually gather customer feedback at all. The watershed moment for customer loyalty theory came in the 1970s when a man called Richard Oliver in the United States published his groundbreaking theory called expectations confirmation theory. This had a framework which transformed understanding of loyalty by providing a structured model that explained how the interplay between expectations and actual experiences shaped customer behavior. Were the customers trusting your organization? Were they loyal to it? And did they become advocates of it? His work was revolutionary because it shifted the focus from satisfaction to the much more nuanced concept of expectations management. His model was very simple. As consumers, we all have expectations of an organization which we're a customer of. Let's say I'm buying some insurance for my car. I have certain expectations about what that insurance provider or providers, plural, would be, and those expectations have been framed and shaped by previous experiences, by marketing and publicity given by the various competing players in the industry, and by conversations with friends, colleagues, and others. So I have certain expectations. If then the experience and the relationship that I have with an insurer, those expectations are delivered in the performance by that supplier, that insurer, then my expectations will be confirmed. If they're not delivered, then the expectations will be disconfirmed, to use the word that Oliver used. And at that stage, organizations were using satisfaction to measure whether or not the repurchase intention was there or not. So customer expectations are confirmed through positive experiences, and the belief in the brand, my brand of insurer, for example, strengthens, fostering increased loyalty. And using that exact example, I actually have been buying my car insurance from the same provider for several years. I'm repeat purchasing, and I like what they do. They make it very easy for me to buy my insurance. And guess what? The price has been going down. What's not to like? Going back to the expectations theory, what Oliver found was that experiences where the experience falls short on expectations, he calls that disconfirmation. And this is where trust is eroded, and that potentially drives the customer to switch to another provider. And it's no surprise that in certain industries, they're very well aware of the fact that customers do switch and switch regularly. If you talk to the supermarket industry, they will tell you that a percentage of their customers are what they call loyal and a percentage are what they call promiscuous. In other words, they shop between shops all the time. And that is very, very common. Of course, their goal is to be able to get them to be much more loyal than the promiscuous group. And I talked to a finance director of a supermarket, and they said exactly that. They want to have more of their customers in the loyal category than in the promiscuous category.
We've nailed the history, and we've talked about understanding how loyalty plays a part in keeping customers. Let's just stay with loyalty a little bit longer.
Loyalty exists on a continuum. It's not a binary state. It's not yes or no, I am loyal, I am not loyal. And it develops gradually through repeated experiences, positive experiences, and confirmation of those expectations over time. Let me give you one other dynamic of expectations, because I think this is also relevant. There are two types of expectations, predicted and ideal. If I go to my local branch of my bank in my small local town at 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, I predict that there's a queue of 22 people waiting to get in because the bank doesn't open till 10 o'clock. My ideal expectation is that they open at 9 o'clock so that when I turn up at 10 o'clock, that queue has disappeared. So that's the difference between ideal and predicted. We need to be able to understand that difference because the organizations that are measuring customer experience are not focused on the predicted, they're focused on the ideal. So that's the beginning, if you like, of the story. In the 1970s and 80s, after Oliver published his first paper, there were a rapid increase in the adoption of satisfaction surveys. And during this time, a troubling disconnect emerged that challenged fundamental assumptions about customer measurement. And let me give you a story which actually illustrates this very well. Many of the companies discovered that high satisfaction scores were not translating into retention as they expected. And my co-founder of my company, Bill Fonvielle, who's an American, was invited by Wells Fargo Bank in the United States to go and sort out a problem for them. He said, "We're doing customer survey on our service quality because we know that our products are not much different from other banks. And so we're focusing on differentiating ourselves through our service. And we want to get to a stage where our customers trust us and like us and stay loyal to us and buy more products and services from us. And ultimately, they become advocates and refer us on. But we've got a problem. Our survey results show increasing levels of satisfaction, but our loyalty figures are going down. They're not going up." And they had noticed over a couple of years a trend in this. And Bill actually knew what he was talking about when he went there. He was expecting this to be the sort of thing that he was already well aware of. His investigation, which was carried out alongside parallel research in the industry, revealed several fundamental flaws in satisfaction-based measurement. And those flaws continue to plague organizations today. And I thought I might go through some of those because they are very useful for organizations to understand that. The first flaw is called the bias trap. The bias trap is about the fact that nearly all satisfaction surveys have questions in them which are created by the organization themselves. They are not created by the customer who's doing the survey. So what happens is the customer sees that the questions in the survey are not relevant to them, and they may have started doing a survey, but they then stop doing it rapidly. So you get what's known as incompletes. The response rates to these surveys go down, and the consequence is that the customer gets unhappy because they've been asked questions which they don't think are relevant to them. The second trap is called the alternative trap. And this is a very common one, and it's extraordinary how few people seem to understand it. I've already touched on the idea of switching. You could have an organization where the satisfaction surveys are through the roof, going brilliantly well, but the customers are not staying loyal because there is a better alternative. And Bill always used to say to us, the definition of loyalty is there is no better alternative. The interesting element of this particular trap is that there is an opposite to it as well. You can be extremely dissatisfied with an organization and still stay loyal. An example, my broadband supplier is a well-known brand name, and I had switched to them from another well-known brand name because I was told they were better. My technologist advisor had said, switch to them, they're better. It turned out that they were worse, or nearly worse. Well, just about as bad as worse, but I'm loyal to them because I know from advice from my technology supplier, that I only have two potential suppliers. My road has got a broadband connection in it, which only permits two potential organizations to supply me. So I'm left in a difficult situation. Both of them are bad. In fact, they're horrible. I'm totally dissatisfied with them, but I'm staying loyal. That is what's known as the alternative trap. The third trap is the definition trap. You talk to a group of about 20 people and ask them to define what satisfaction means, and you get 20 different answers. One of the most common answers is they write down satisfaction means it's okay or it's adequate. And of course, one of the things that the organization doesn't want is to be supplying something that's okay or adequate. That's not going to cut the mustard, is it? We want our customers to be actually measuring something which is really terrific, but okay doesn't come up to the same level of definition. Adequate is far below the excellence that suppliers aim to deliver, and it creates a dangerous measurement ambiguity. The fourth trap is what's called the forwards-backwards trap. Nearly all satisfaction surveys are after the event. They're backwards-looking. And yet, most of the organizations who want to carry out feedback from their customers today want something that's forward-looking. It's going to help them to be able to identify what are the things that they need to be doing in the future. You can't correct the past, but you can do something about the future. The next trap is called the compared to what trap, and this is a really interesting one. Nearly all satisfaction surveys have two points of measurement in them. They have a scale, a 1 to 7, a 1 to 5, a 0 to 10, a 0 to 11 scale, whatever. They have a scale. And then they have a scoring point, which is give us a score on this scale. And you might get, let's say it's a 1 to 7 scale, you might get a score of 5 on a 1 to 7 scale. That scale is useless without having a key question answered. And that question is, what is this compared to? How do I know what good looks like? Let me give you an analogy here. If you were a police officer running a speed trap and in your hand is a handheld police speed gun, you'd be pointing it towards oncoming vehicles. And the gun would give you two bits of data, a scale, probably miles an hour or kph if it's in the continent. Let's say it's 0 to 100. And then it gives you a figure, which is the speed of the oncoming vehicle. Let's say that vehicle is traveling at 45 on this scale. That piece of information is useless unless the police officer has another piece of information, which is the compared to what question. And the question for the police officer is very simple. Compared to where I'm standing. If I'm standing in a 50 mile an hour zone and the speed is 45, then that vehicle's okay. But if I'm standing in a 30 miles an hour zone and the vehicle's doing 45, then that's not okay. The compared to what question is really vital, and virtually no satisfaction surveys ever include it. So the data that the organization gets is practically useless. The last of our traps that I wanted to mention, and the predictive trap, is very, very simple to understand. In thinking about loyalty, it is important that the method used for measuring the customer experience is one that predicts loyalty. You would say that was pretty obvious, isn't it? But what is extraordinary is that the research that Bill carried out some years ago, supported and enhanced by others who've done work ever since, is that satisfaction as a measure is not and has never been a reliable predictor of loyalty. And yet, organizations use it all the time. And they're looking to gain loyalty. Let me give an example of a situation which is current. In the wealth management industry, the private banks and wealth management organizations are all wishing to retain their high net worth individual clients. Currently, in the financial services sector, client churn, according to Pricewaterhouse, per year, and it has stayed this for the last 5 years, is between 21 to 24% of the total client base. If I give you a figure to help you to understand this a little bit more, if you're an organization in financial services and you have 50,000 clients, and each of those clients makes your organization, a profit of £1,000 per year, then that 24% client churn is costing you £12 million a year. And yet, most organizations don't measure this. In addition to that, to keep your client numbers the same, you've got to invest in a significant amount of customer acquisition. And that will cost you, again, using data provided by the industry, another 6 million. So the total losses for your organization to stand still in this environment today is 18 million. Now, I said that Pricewaterhouse produced the statistic of 21 to 24%. This year, May this year, Ernst & Young produced a report which identified that in private banking and wealth management, 29% of clients are considering switching. So it's higher than the figure that Pricewaterhouse produced. So it is in those organizations' best interest to drive a campaign for increasing their client loyalty. You would say that's a no-brainer. Well, yes, it is. However, vast majority of these wealth management firms and private banks are using satisfaction as their measure. And the chief executives and the C-suite operators in these organizations are now getting extremely concerned about the costs of their initiative to keep their clients, which are not producing the return on investment that they want. And that is the key characteristic of some of the things that is happening.
Now, at this point in our company, CJ's team is feeling pretty condemned. They're making all the same errors that Rowan's pointing out. They've misidentified why they're losing business. And you may feel the same. However, there will be one question nagging them. Is all of this effort to understand the customer experience worth it? So therefore, it's important that we move on to that part of the webinar where Rowan explicitly says, well, what's at stake here?
In 1996, a partner in Bain published a famous book called The Loyalty Effect. His name is Fred Reichelt, and he's known as the guru in the industry. The book marked a pivotal moment in business thinking, elevated customer centricity from a deep departmental concern to C-suite priority. And whilst critics noted correctly at the time that many of Reichelt's ideas synthesize existing concept into a package which was very compelling rather than introducing entirely novel theories, the Bain research that supported it provided compelling empirical evidence that transformed executive perspectives on their investments in customer experience. The book's main finding were that, and this is something which I've been talking about for decades, 5% increase in customer retention can drive profit increasing ranging from 20 to 125% depending on industry. And this creates a direct connection between customer loyalty and profit metrics by which, of course, the executives themselves are evaluated and compensated. This is a powerful link between customer experiences and financial performance. And it catalyzed unprecedented interest in customer-centric strategies across the industries. It gave them the financial validation for robust financial justification for investment. It demonstrated quantifiable returns, and executives could confidently present this to the boards and shareholders. Of course, what happened is that this book spawned an industry, a dedicated customer experience industry complete with specialized consultancies, technology platforms, and professional certifications focused exclusively on customer experience management. The one really interesting characteristic about the majority of companies in this industry is that very few of them are customer-driven themselves. The last piece of this, the loyalty revolution, was that Reichheld followed up his first book with a second one called Loyalty Rules in 2001, and that established the critical connection between the employee experience and the customer experience, and expanded the loyalty framework to encompass internal organization factors. And it is absolutely well known, and it was well known before Reichheld, that if you've got really great employees who are motivated and giving you discretionary effort, then it is likely that you're going to have a high quality customer experience as well.
So Rowan's point about motivated employees is very well made, and we'll investigate that in another podcast. But what he is picking out is there is real pound, shillings and pence attached to mastering this area. Now, we wouldn't do this podcast and this series without leaving you with some practical pointers. And so to end this podcast, Rowan is actually going to point to some actions you can take.
Well, I take you back to the traps, the satisfaction traps. I gave you those seven traps. Obviously, the first thing that an organization should be doing is to avoid the seven traps. And that may be quite difficult for them because they've been using satisfaction as a method for a very long time, but they need to be able to establish a different method for getting feedback from their customers so that they can improve their customer experience. Of all of those traps, the fact that they're using satisfaction as a measure is the biggest problem. And that's because the last trap, the predictive trap, is the one that's the most difficult to address. So what should they be thinking about? Well, I'll give you a list of things that they should be thinking about, because these are all possible today and they are not new. They've been tried and tested, and there are things that can be done. So the very first thing that organizations should be thinking about is gathering the expectations of their customers. And if you're going to do employees at the same time, I recommend that as well, because you can gather expectations of employees in exactly the same way as you can of customers. So gathering the expectations, it's a technique which requires professional activity behind it. It's not for the people who don't know what they're doing. But it is something which provides that organization with a single page blueprint of the customer experience created by the customers, which you could probably imagine for most organization is a piece of gold. We now know exactly what our customer experience would look like, and it's been given to us by our customers. So that's the start point. Of course, that also answers the famous compared to what question. Well, compared to what's on our blueprint. Our blueprint tells us what the customers expect of an ideal. The second thing is, that first step is quantitative research. And it should not be done inside the organization to avoid the bias trap. It is a specialist activity. The second stage in the journey now is one that they'll be more familiar with, which is to use either interviews, focus groups, or surveys to understand the performance of the organization against what the customers expect. And here's a really interesting insight, which is really important. Your survey questions are the expectations. In other words, the customer sets the questions in the survey. And that way you get a higher response rate and you get more valuable data. Now, there's a couple of other characteristics about this quantitative research. You're asking them to score your performance. And because you're asking them to score each expectation, and one of the things that we will have done in terms of the work that helps you here is that the expectations will be weighted because they're not all the same. One of the key characteristics is that you can ask your customers not one question of a score, but four. And the four questions you ask are, what is an ideal performance? So they give you a score for that. What is a minimally acceptable performance? They give you a score for that. And how does our organization perform? So you've now got three scores on your scale. The top score is the one that's ideal, the bottom is the minimum acceptable, and your score, we hope, is somewhere in between. Now, that gap, that top to bottom gap between the ideal and the minimum acceptable is called a zone of tolerance. And it is possible to put a 100% scale on that zone to give you an indication of where you perform within the zone of tolerance. It is possible, of course, to perform above the ideal or even beneath the minimum acceptable. And those can give you either an extra plus above your 100 or a minus beneath your naught on your 100% scale. And of course, I can explain and show how this works in reality. I said there were four questions, and the fourth question is one that is never used, but it is extraordinarily powerful. Nearly all consumers have experience of competitors. So let's go back to our private banks as an example, which we used earlier. A high net worth individual does not keep their money in one private bank. They keep them in two or three or four private banks. So they have experience of several private banks. And in your survey, you can ask them the question, first of all, name another private bank, and then secondly, give us its performance score. Yeah. So from your survey, you now have the opportunity to identify a number of different characteristics. The first one is called the expectations index, which is how do you score overall as an organization? The second thing, you're going to get a performance gap, which is the gap between the ideal and the actual. And that can give you an average gap as well. And then lastly, you get a competitor gap because you've asked the performance of competitors. And in that, you will identify a number of characteristics. Are you performing better or worse than the competition? Do you have a threat or do you have an advantage? Chief executives love the data from that because it tells them insights about their competitors from their customers, which they've never seen before. It also permits them to think deeply about how they can differentiate their organization from their competitors. And there are examples which we can give you where we have actually shown an organization to make a massive difference in their sales simply by differentiation of the customer experience or the sales experience.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Are You Being Served? We've only just scratched the surface of this vital area of business growth with Rowan Jackson. If you're facing similar challenges and want actionable, confidential advice, you can reach out to him at promisingoutcomes.com. Thanks for listening. This series is produced by Smart Resource Solutions. We'll see you next time. In the world of business, change is the only constant. Technology evolves, talent needs shift, and the question becomes, not only do you have the right resources to keep up, but do you have what it takes to be genuinely competitive? Since 1999, Smart Resources has been the answer for forward-thinking companies. We are a comprehensive, full-service IT recruitment partner dedicated to connecting you with hard-to-find talent. But we are so much more. Our unique business consultancy team helps you optimize your teams and your strategy. We produce the industry-leading business insight podcast, Are You Being Served? And we offer a comprehensive, free jobs board for employers, which simplifies your search. We are unique, we are comprehensive, and we are certainly established. So, stop just filling positions. Start building your future. Visit smartresourcesolutions.com today. That's smartresourcesolutions.com.